Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We'll talk about the Phillies in the final half hour. Good time to reflect on what they've done so far and then where they're going in this upcoming second half of the season. Right now, the Phillies would be in the number two wild card spot. They would be in the number two wild card spot at this time. Yet, you sense the fan base is not thrilled with what's happening. Why? Well, look, they made a lot of moves in the offseason. And to be honest with you, there isn't a single move they made in the offseason I disagree with. Sean, I thought they made great moves.
Certainly did. I know you were very impressed late July at the deadline when they brought in Gene Segura. Terrific selection there. I mean, we knew they were only going to have Carlos Santana for a very short period of time, so he had left, so that made room for Andrew McCutchen in the outfield. It's just going to be interesting to see what priorities they're going to do here as we get toward the end of July and the trade deadline, so be curious to get Tim Kelly's take on that, if they're going to focus on pitching. And the key is how much money. I mean, are you going to go... Are you going to fork a lot of money toward a rental? Is that maybe the wrong thing to do? Or if you want to go someone that's going to be with you a little more long-term, maybe 2 or 3 years down the road?
Well, actually, 2 or 3 years down the road is more expensive.
Yeah.
Rental means you're just paying the salary for the rest of the year. All right, let's get to our play-by-play call of the day. Joey Gallo for the American League provides a long ball.
Smith, the lefty, fires. Swing and a rocket right field. Way back there. And gone. An absolute bullet off the bat of Joey Gallo. Dave Roberts matches up. And Joey Gallo says, left on left, not going to bother me. AL adds another. And it is now 4-1. And that was a screamer.
And they needed it. John Schaube with a call on ESPN Radio last night, and the American League needed it because that made it 4-1. They won 4-3. Pete Alonso delivered a two-run single to the left in the eighth inning. I finally did get a chance to get back in time to see the eighth and ninth innings. That's about what I thought. I thought maybe I'd get back by the seventh, but got a chance to see the eighth and ninth innings last night. So, what? The ESPYs are tomorrow night, is that right?
Tonight.
Tonight.
Tracy Morgan is hosting.
I will be remarkably... How many years of the ESPYs is this now?
Definitely, was it over 20 for sure? 20, let's see, what, 25, 26? I'm trying to remember when.
So far.
What year did Valvano, what was the Valvano speech? What year was that?
Yeah.
Was that 93 or?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
94?
I would say that since the night of that speech, I have watched exactly 0 minutes of the ESPYs. Yeah, I'm not into that stuff. Hey, let's celebrate me! Oh my God, goodness sakes! Really?
I'll probably watch the monologue tonight. I may watch the beginning just to see how funny Tracy is.
No, I don't think... No, it's not going to be worth... Look, I don't blame ESPN for doing this. You got to come up with something. It fills a dead spot. You know, the U.S. women's soccer team will be saluted tonight. They had their parade today in the Canyon of Champions in New York. And they'll be saluted tonight. Then after that, it's going to be interesting as to how much we hear about them for the next 3 years. Even in the Olympics, it's going to be a little... it's not going to be as extensive. Now, there might be a channel that carries them because...
This National Women's Soccer League, there's nine teams in the league, and ESPN, not long ago, announced that they're going to televise 14 games of the league's second half of the season, and they were able to get a beer sponsor in as well. So they're hoping... That's going to give the league a wider reach, and of course, that's going to bring in more money. You got a prominent beer sponsor in there too.
I have, with all due respect, and it's just this is just an observation. It's nothing to do with anything else. I mean,
and when people are
I think it's going to be a struggle.
And when people are watching, it's the eyeball test. It's like, wow, look at all those empty seats. I mean, Kansas City, great, they have great passionate soccer fans there, and as well as in the Pacific Northwest. But you got other teams in this National Women's Soccer League, they just don't pull in as many people as Portland and like Utah do.
Sure.
So but yeah, like you said, that's where the struggle comes in.
I think it's going to be a struggle. I admire the attempt, believe me. And if we had a team here, I'd be talking about the team, because you have to keep local fans appraised of what's going on locally. But in general, I will freely admit, I have my doubts that this is going to take off. There's a lot of emotion, following something like this. Here we go. This is it. This will be great. And I understand the emotion of it. But I've also seen this record play out over and over and over again. The North American Soccer League was supposed to be the be-all, end-all that got soccer on the map in this country. I watched the North American Soccer League fold. MLS has done well, but they're losing money. I know Tony Knopp and I talk about it all the time, and there's a lot of young people that love soccer, but they're not making a lot of money. In fact, they're losing money. This proposition... is, I think, a worthy attempt, but you've got to look at it as where is it going to be a year or a year and a half from now?
It turns out
when the emotion has worn off.
It turns out the National Women's Soccer League, they have been in existence for 7 years, so they have already survived longer than the Women's United Soccer Association. That was in the early 2000s. And also you had women's professional soccer, and they were in business from 2007 to 2012. But one other thing to look at, too, is the wealthy clubs in Europe. I mean, not every Premier League team, not every team in Spain, not every team in France, has a powerful women's squad. But... they want to bolster their investments, you would think. And you figure there's probably women in those, clubs and teams that have been in development for a couple of years. So they want to see them flourish as well. So that also is something that the NWSL will have to deal with.
Well, it's more than that. Look, I think at one point the NWSL did have a contract with Lifetime. Getting on ESPN is going to be better, with all due respect to Lifetime. So being on there will be better, but Sean, it's going to be a struggle. I'm sorry. You can't... You can't manufacture interest. People are interested in the label United States soccer team. Okay, the label means something. The name Washington doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything about anybody here. It's just going to be a struggle. There are just certain sports where in that sport, and this is the vast majority of Olympic sports, the label United States is the draw. And it, Alex Morgan's had a great career. Megan Rapinoe's had a great career. Rose Lavelle looks like she has a chance to have a really great, great career. So they've done a great job of transitioning over from the Mia Hamms, the Brandi Chastains, to Carly Lloyd, to Megan Rapinoe. They've done a great job of transitioning from one star to the next under the label of United States. But what can you tell me, for all the publicity Megan Rapinoe's getting right now, and she's getting a lot of publicity, tell me exactly what she's done in the last 3 years. Now, it's been a lot, but tell me what she's done. Can anybody out there tell me what Megan Rapinoe has done over the last 3 years? In 16, 17, and 18, what did she do? Do you know how many goals she scored? Do you know where she was playing? This right now is the single most prominent soccer name of the country. Alex Morgan can stand side by side as a prominent soccer name of this country. What's Alex Morgan done the last 3 years? Do you know? Where has she played? What has she done? It is the same. In other words, Shaun White, great snowboarder. What's Shaun White done in the past year? Now, these people have been competing, and they've been doing it at high levels. Right? But do you know about it? See, what happens with a lot of these sports, the Olympic sports, and let's put soccer in some ways into that Olympic sport category, is like, okay, tell me what Usain Bolt has done in the last year. What's he done? Do you know?
I heard he was trying out for soccer. I guess that didn't work out too
right.
well.
Right, but I'm just saying, but like from 20, okay, we've talked about this with Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps went Olympiad to Olympiad. All right. So Michael Phelps retired in Rio, right, in 2016. He did marvelous things in London, right? So in 13, 14, and 15, what did Michael Phelps do? Can you tell me? Do any of you out there have an answer for it? What did he do? Because the only championship that means anything to the average fan in this country is that Olympic championship that has your name across it, or in this case, for women's soccer and men's soccer, World Cup Olympic title, Olympic gold medalist. Other than that, even though there are competitions all over the place. Remember last year I did a big piece with Allie McHugh because she shocked everybody out at Irvine. Well, if Allie McHugh had not shocked everybody out at Irvine, the vast majority of you would not have known that anything was going on in Irvine. Correct? I mean, this is not one of those, hey, let's have a cruel moment on the radio. I'm trying to be realistic here with everybody. But the Arizona Cardinals, who had the worst record in the NFL, the vast majority of you out there know they drafted Kyler Murray. You know the New Orleans Pelicans drafted Zion Williamson. You know, Phillies fans know the lineup of the Atlanta Braves. Got to somehow beat those guys. Got to get Acuna out. Got to get Markakis out. Got to, you know. And they know the lineup of the Mets, and they make fun of it. Elio's now mad. But see, that's where the interest in the country is. You know, somebody like Serena Williams is relevant every single year because there's Serena Williams playing in the Australian Open. There's Serena Williams playing in the French Open. Here's Serena Williams advancing at Wimbledon. There's Serena Williams at the U.S. Open. There's Venus Williams. Same story. Four tournaments a year that are big deal, Grand Slam tournaments, and guess what? They're right there. Yet these athletes, through no fault of their own, and I completely understand the reasoning behind having a pro women's soccer league in this country, it is absolutely a worthy attempt to make. But realistically, I have my doubts because I would say what the last league to at least really make it, Sean, you know, the in the last 25 years is probably MLS, where they've been able to hang on and hang in there because other leagues have tried and they've gone by the wayside. The ABA tried, went by the wayside. WHA, I mean, the ABA had four teams absorbed by the NBA. The WHA had four teams absorbed by the NHL. The various football leagues from the Alliance to the XFL to the USFL to the WFL, they've all tried. You know, the AFL was able to get 10 teams absorbed by the NFL. But new leagues, Sean, just struggle surviving. There's only so much money to go around out there, and it's been, here's the big one. There's only so much interest to go around.
Yeah, look at the XFL, you know, from earlier in the 2000s. You know, so many people were curious opening night as to, oh, how's this going to be? How's this going to look? How's this going to feel? But then it just, you know, tanked within, oh, man. Within a blink of an eye. And then look at the AAF earlier this year. Wow, opening night. Okay, we'll see if this thing has some legs. Well, man, month and a half later, done.
See, and again, that's the most popular sport in the country, football. Well, outside of the NFL, interest wanes. Except for college football, of course. That's totally different animal. Same thing with college basketball. So the attempt is worthy. I admire the attempt. Experience tells me that it's going to be a hard, hard road for the league because you can't manufacture and force interest. I'll give you an example. WNBA. I mean, they've hung around for a long time. But, you never hear them talking about turning profits. And who knows how ticket sales really are. I don't mean how many people are sitting there. I'm talking about ticket sales. And how expensive are the tickets? I don't know. Again, you can't force interest. Next year, the women's soccer team will reconvene in Tokyo. Their matches will probably end up being on one of the Olympic channels of NBC. But they won't be the focal point like being in the World Cup. You're the focal point because it's a soccer tournament. So you're the focal point. Well, at the Olympics, they'll be another potentially great story, but they aren't the focal point. It's just like all the other Olympic sports. All the great track and field athletes are running in meets and world championships and things like that for 3 years, and you don't know anything about it unless you're really deeply into track. It's the same story with this. You're not going to be, again, Megan Rapinoe has been the face of the U.S. women's soccer team. She's been the face of it. Right? She was unbelievably good in France, right? Tell me what she's done the last 3 years. What team has she played for? How many goals has she scored? Roughly, plus or minus 10. Can you? Can anybody do that? And she's been playing. You don't just like show up and 4 years ago, okay, I'm back, here I am. She's been playing. And I'm sure she's been playing great wherever she's been because she's a great player. But can you tell me what she's done the last 3 years since Canada? No, because, again, these sports show up on the consciousness of the American radar every 4 years. It's not the fault of the sport. But you can't force interest. The label United States draws people to the television set, which then in turn makes a star out of Alex Morgan, which then in turn makes a star out of Megan Rapinoe, out of Rose Lavelle, out of Allie Krieger, out of Alyssa Nair. Okay, we'll come back. Final half hour, we'll talk about the Phillies. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hubbell's Wharf. Tim Kelly, host of the daily Locked On Phillies podcast and from PhilliesNation.com, joins us. Hi, Tim. How have you been?
I've been great. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's start with Jake Arrieta. What's the story there with him and his ability to keep pitching?
He has bone spurs in his elbow, and that is an injury that if he has surgery on, that would put him out for the rest of the season. Now, I think there is a legitimate debate to be had at this point how much he's helping the Phillies, but the Phillies certainly need stable arms in their rotation after Aaron Nola, and it appears he's going to continue to try to pitch through this. If he struggles this weekend, I think a decision will have to be made, but it appears he's going to get another shot to pitch this weekend.
Which then is the next part. The trade deadline is coming up. I know when I sit at Medler Field, Lebrano Park, doing the State College Spikes games, I've seen one scout after another now roll through because these trades are multi-level. What should the Phillies be looking for? Where might there be some interest?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the Phillies have a seven-game homestand after the All-Star break that features three with the Nationals this weekend and then four with the Dodgers. If the season ended today, they would be in one of the two wild card spots. If they completely tank in that seven-game stretch, which certainly isn't entirely out of the realm of possibility, then I think they do have to have a legitimate debate about what they are and whether it makes sense to buy. Certainly, though, they're not without needs. They probably need two starting pitchers, and that may even be being generous, and one of either a center fielder or a third baseman because Scott Kingery can't play, and probably even a reliever. So I would say they are in a situation where you wonder if they have too many holes to fix in one trade deadline. If they do choose to go in for a pitcher, a starting pitcher, I would say they should be looking for someone that is under team control beyond 2019. So that would rule out somebody like Madison Bumgarner. I think if you're making that type of trade, you're making a trade thinking the Phillies can win the World Series this year. And, you know, you'd love that to be the possibility, but in all likelihood, you would like someone that you have under team control beyond this season. So there's options like Marcus Stroman out there. I do just wonder if the Phillies, with limited prospect capital, feel that it's going to be worth going pushing the chips to the center of the table in this season.
All right, so Tim, they made a lot of moves in the offseason, and there isn't a single move they made in the offseason that I disagree with. In reality now, after that laundry list that you just gave us, Shouldn't that tell us how far the Phillies had to go a year ago?
Yeah, I think a lot of us made the mistake of thinking the Phillies caught up with the Braves in the offseason. And even beyond the fact that you need a little bit more offensively from Bryce Harper, you need a little bit more offensively from JT Realmuto, as good as he's been on defense, I think you there's only so many holes you can fix on a team in one off season, and I don't think that speaks well to how the organization has developed talent, because a team like the Braves seems to continue to be able to recycle and bring up new pieces. The Phillies haven't done that, but it does speak to the fact that they fixed one aspect, which was their lineup, and even that I don't think has been as good as they expected. There's still lots of holes in the rotation. They haven't gotten the development they hoped for from any of Nick Pivetta, Zach Eflin, or Vince Velasquez. And then the bullpen, Hector Neris has had an excellent year, but they may have gone to the well one too many times with some veterans like Pat Neshek. Tommy Hunter's back now and looked good, but missed the first 3 months of the season. David Robertson hasn't pitched since mid-April, and Juan Nicasio just really hasn't been that good. So they tried to fix a lot in one off season, and oftentimes that's a process that realistically takes two or three off seasons.
You did mention in a previous answer, Tim, about the lack of organizational capital. I believe that's how you phrased it. So when you look at the minor league system, Adam Haseley did come up at one point, then he had to go on the IL. Is there any short-term help organizationally, and is there any help trade-wise organizationally?
Yeah, I don't think there's much help, because if there's much help starting rotation-wise, it would be here by now. They've been reluctant to move Adonis Medina, who's their top pitching prospect. Spencer Howard, who I would actually say is probably going to end up being a better prospect, he's not particularly close to the major league level. I think we've all seen what Alec Boehm is going to be. I think at least what we hope he's going to be is 30 home run power, at least come May next season, after the Phillies can secure another year of team control over him. I would imagine he'll be the starter at third base. Whether his glove plays at that position long term remains to be seen. But he's a legitimate middle of the order bat. Charlie Manuel, who knows a thing or two about hitting, was very complimentary of him at the Futures game. Beyond that, though, you mentioned Adam Haseley. It wouldn't surprise me, especially with an uncertain future for Odubel Herrera, if Haseley's the starting center fielder next season. But beyond Haseley, there just isn't a ton of impact talent at the upper levels of the minor leagues.
Now, as somebody who's seen Boehm play a lot, because he was at Williamsport last year, you're right. He certainly has the bat and can drive the ball. Problem at third base, though, Tim, is you've got to be able to bend down to get a ball. And that, no offense, that's not his strong suit. I mean, the defensively, he's going to have to make himself a lot better if he wants to be a guy that you can count on an everyday basis. I mean, if he hits 30 home runs, great, but you also can't give up 30.
You're right about that, and it's not as though the Phillies' best players have been particularly effective at fielding. Bryce Harper's actually had a bounce-back season defensively this year, but still, you kind of know what he is. You didn't sign him for his defense. He's an average to maybe slightly above average fielder this year. Hoskins, if we're being honest with ourselves, would probably be a DH on an American League team. So You don't really have a spot to put Boehm if it doesn't work at third base.
Right.
Maybe left field.
Right, and Boehm, yeah. Go ahead, Tim.
Maybe you move him to left field or if the DH comes to the National League and you move Hoskins there, maybe Boehm becomes a third baseman. But if, for all intents and purposes, it would be much better for you if he clicks at third base.
Yeah, because Boehm to me is a DH. With all due respect to him, that's what I think he is when I watch him. How closely are you monitoring the minor leagues and the progress along the way of a guy like Mickey Moniak, who's now in the IL at Reading?
Mickey Moniak's interesting. I would say you mentioned progress. He's still a work in progress. He's only 21, but he was the number one pick overall. And when you consider what Vlad Guerrero, who just turned 20, and Ronald Acuna did at the All-Star game, Ronald Acuna's 21. 21 isn't that young anymore in Major League Baseball terms. He had very good numbers the second half of last season, and I think the Phillies were hoping he would go to Reading, which is a hitter's ballpark where Rhys Hoskins and Scott Kingery and a variety of other people have seen their power numbers explode. I think the Phillies were hoping for an uptick there. So far, they haven't gotten that. He has 4 home runs and 38 RBIs. So it's still a wait and see on Mickey Moniak. He's not a bad player. He's going to reach the major league level. But is it fair to say that 3 years after him being the number one overall pick, his progression has been a little bit disappointing? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, because, I mean, he'll be in Lehigh Valley next year, in all likelihood, which then puts him as a, you know, he at that point is to the threshold of the majors and might be a September call-up. He'd be doing that at the age of 22. Bohm probably will be at Lehigh Valley next year, but he might be a midseason call-up. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I would remind everyone that Bohm was drafted out of college and Moniak was out of high school. But again,
I pointed that out to everybody repeatedly.
Right, and the amount of people that are breaking into the league now at 2021, Moniak is not forcing your hand right now. That doesn't mean he won't develop into a good piece. Players develop at different paces. But for a number one pick, even in a year where there really wasn't a consensus number one pick, and there was a financial strategy of why they maybe took him over other pieces, he's not kicking down the door.
Right. So now let's get back to the big club here along the way. How well, we've talked about the acquisitions they made. One guy you didn't mention is Gene Segura. What has he meant to the infield? What's he meant at the plate?
Gene Segura is someone that is an impact hitter. He goes the other way. Certainly, I think what a lot of people are going to remember from Gene Segura in the first half, for better or for worse, is the two occasions of not running out of the batter's box, which certainly have had an impact on this season, regardless of where you fall and whether he should have been benched or not benched. But he really is a very good hitter, and I would imagine he's going to have a strong second half. The thing to note, though, is there was a time where that trade appeared like a slam dunk, and Carlos Santana, which I am not particularly surprised by, but I know a lot of people are, has obviously had a bounce back season. He's an all-star this year. And J.P. Crawford, who they sent there, is hitting like 280 with the Mariners since he's come up. So, and he's only 23 or 24 still. So Gene Segura is giving you an impact, but it's not an impact where you traded nothing to get him, I would say.
All right, so now we hit this part. You look at the Braves, and the Nationals are in front of them too. And for Bryce Harper, that's feel like a slice of irony. It's a half game. But what is it about, let's start with the Braves. Why weren't they able to close the gap on the Braves? Is it just a question of the Braves' young talent, just to its credit, just kept getting better?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why last year, and it's proving to be why again. The Phillies have gone through the number five spot in the rotation has turned into an absolute hole where 4 or 5 different guys haven't been able to do it. And meanwhile, the Braves just continue to pull up these arms like Mike Soroka. Mike Fultonevich was an all-star for them last year and had a disastrous first half that saw him sent to AAA and miss a beat. If that had happened with the Phillies, there's no way they would have been able to sustain that. And I think that's why the Braves have done a better job of developing talent. For all the accomplishments the Phillies lineup has, the Braves have had a better overall lineup in the first half of the season than the Phillies have had. Right now, I'm just not sure there's even a debate about who's a better team.
Okay, now, why is Washington in front of them? Because, I mean, they lost Harper. How have they made up for it?
They lost Harper, but Max Scherzer, he continues to find another level. And even when you get beyond Max Scherzer, which is hard to do because he's going to win another Cy Young this year, I think, they have Patrick Corbin, they have Steven Strasburg, and lineup-wise, if any team was built to sustain a loss of Bryce Harper or to be able to be all right after a loss, it was the Nationals with Trey Turner, with Anthony Rendon, with Juan Soto. They're another team that has done a remarkable job of developing internal talent, and the Phillies haven't completely lost out on that. They've developed Hoskins, they've developed Kingery, they developed Noah, but the Nationals and Braves have done a better job of that, and they've supplemented, especially in the case of the Nationals, with effective free agent signings like Max Scherzer.
All right, so now, where to you is the line? You know, what 2 weeks after this, is this the point where you're starting to seriously say, okay, they're on the right track, or they need to make deals? Is the two-week window what you're looking at, Tim?
I think we've been in the tweak window in the sense that you could make a trade for a tweak around the edges type player like they did last year, like when they traded for Asdrubal Cabrera, someone that you're not going to give up a ton to get and you hope makes an impact, but if they don't, they don't. In terms of making a major trade that's going to require giving up prospects, and again, I don't really know who you're going to give up because I don't think they're giving up Alec Bohm. But even that aside, I think you get through this series with the Nationals, and then you have a four-game series with the Dodgers. And you know, at that point, you're going to have to legitimately say, if the Phillies go 2-5 in that stretch, does it make sense, even with all the needs, to really make that type of an impact trade? Because it's one thing to say, oh, well, those are two of the better teams in the National League. Well, that's how the playoffs work. You play the better teams in the National League. So if you don't feel like you can beat those teams, and if you don't feel like one impact really is going to move the needle, even if it's a very good trade, then you have to be honest with yourself.
Tim, an absolute pleasure. Appreciate it so much. What's the next topic on your podcast?
Friday, I'm going to go over the three things that the Phillies need to show us on or in the second half. So I'm certainly looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to viewing it as well. Thanks so much, Tim. Appreciate your time very much.
Awesome. Have a good one.
You too. That's Tim Kelly, host of the daily Locked On Phillies podcast and from PhilliesNation.com. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Some odd reason, Sean and I were able to convince the suit that Nick Saban's house on the lake in Alabama is a timeshare. It's like, I don't know about you. I thought that was...
Coach Saban would say, hey, where can I shave off some bucks? So the suit can help him out, but I don't think Nick would have to worry about that. So being the highest paid state employee in Alabama. So.
I mean, I just... No offense, I just... I thought it was sad that he bought it.
Caught him at a very vulnerable point.
It's a timeshare, I swear.
Yeah. He let his guard down. He's on vacation this week, so. But is it at a timeshare?
Yeah. Right now, that phone line that they're trying to get you to call to get out of timeshares, Nick's holding on too.
Who are you talking to? Exit team.
Exit team trying to get out.
Save my skin.
That meeting with Tungavaiola is going to have to be on hold. Got to get out of this thing.
I sat through a three-hour presentation and I ended up with this.
God, there's some guy in Danville that wants next week. Some digital media guy claims he knows Eli.
I didn't give Sue his number, I swear. No clue how he got it.
You won't believe my timeshare's worth. What? They even featured your timeshare on ESPN.
Show is it on Outside the Lines?
I think so. Oh, my goodness.
Bob Lee turns on Outside the Lines. What's about a time show? What?
What?
What am I looking at? Do I have to go back in? Do I have to go back on campus?
Nick Saban has a timeshare with that guy? Really? It's great. Nick wants to play golf. Oh, God. Oh.
Just the mere look on Craig's face and the Chiefs' face after that round of golf, where it looked like they'd been tortured.
Alabama Media Day. Nick was asked about a chudder. What?
a chudder and a timeshare. Oh.
That's one time where he'd reach that bottle of Coke and open it up.
Hoover, Alabama, overtaken by the chudder and a timeshare. We bonded. Well, there's going to be a lot of Penn State football talk coming up. So next week, I won't be here next week, but and I'm not going to be in Chicago, so that is not going to be the deal. But the Big Ten meetings are in Chicago. The media days are in Chicago next week. Everybody's bringing seniors. I'll give you an example. ACC media day in Charlotte. Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback of Clemson, is not going. I mean, you know, look, coaches bring seniors. Now, is that good for the league he's not going? Ah. Believe me, you don't think at some point the media is not going to get a chance to talk to Trevor Lawrence? Yeah, I think Penn State's bringing, Cam Brown, Blake Gilligan, and John Reed. Okay. Penn State's going to have a media day coming up, so believe me, they'll show up at that. Hey, tomorrow, Bill Bender, Sporting News, Mark Brennan.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.